Avraham Avinu, he went on this journey. When he was a child, he began to explore in his mind, always wondering, where are the stars from? He had no mentor, the Rambam writes. He had no information. And ultimately, yet he found, with a lot of working and searching, soul searching, he found that he was able to understand and recognize that there was a God. We make a lot of decisions. Every morning we got the question of, you know, latte, regular coffee, or milk or sugar. Different types of decisions. Leaving to work, what time should I leave? Again, it doesn't necessarily matter if you leave 5 minutes later sometimes or 5 minutes earlier, but it's another kind of decision that we make. Again, is it an important decision? Certainly it's an important decision to come on time to school, to come on time to work. But it's not the same kind of decision, and depending on the kind of decision we're talking about, might determine on the kind of proof or expectations that we have. When I get in my car every morning to go to work, I hope that the car will turn on. We're in the market for a new car right now. And hopefully it'll turn on. And based on that, people are laughing into my car. Based on that expectation, that experience, so we make decisions. We make decisions very often not knowing 100%. We make decisions in life, assuming that certain things are going to be true. One of the more difficult decisions in DRS is always what to order for lunch. That decision is something that's on everyone's mind every single day in DRS. It's a strange phenomenon only in DRS, but that is something that's a reality. But the decision of ultimately, that decision, I don't need to know 100% that lunch is going to be good in order to order lunch, because it's really not that important in the greater scheme of things. That is the kind of decision we might say it is an unimportant and ultimately often not urgent decision. Other decisions are important, but not as urgent. I can wait to figure out certain things. Let me give you the following two scenarios. Again, unfortunately, we're a little bit, a lot of these on the bottom, so I'll try to talk you through. The text didn't exactly line up. Here's a situation. We'll turn off the lights. I'm going to read under the desk. Move it. Move the desk. There's a new issue with the final towns. They found out that in Sprite, there's poison in Sprite. Poison in Sprite. The question is, should you drink the Sprite? Would you drink, if you knew there's a 5% chance in all the Sprite in the five towns, would you drink that can of Sprite? So, I don't know about you, most likely. You know what? I don't need it. Sprite's not so good. Okay, it's a decent drink, right? I'd rather not. I'd rather drink the Coke. That's the type of decision that I would say is, it's not an urgent decision. The fact that there's a 5% chance that any Sprite has some poison in it, I'm just going to stay away from it. Now, that decision and the amount of proof that I would need might change in a different scenario. The expectation of whether something is poisonous or not, would I ever drink potentially something that is poisonous? Would I ever act on less than 100% knowledge? There are times where it might change. How about in the following scenario? In the middle of the desert, it's been two and a half days without any water. And ultimately, a can of Sprite drops down, and you see it in the middle of the desert. And you remember, it has a serial number, exactly, it's from the five towns, the same 5% chance. Same 5% chance that it might be poisonous. Would you possibly be willing, after 2.5 days without any water, to drink that can of Sprite? I'd venture to say many of us might, many of us may still not. It's possible. But ultimately, the reason why, what changes in that decision frame, is that I'm willing to act on less than 100% knowledge, 100% proof of the knowledge that this drink is healthy for me, because it's an urgent decision. If I don't act with a decisiveness quickly, I might end up dying. And therefore, I have to act fast. As a point of introduction, I want you to understand that we're going to try our best to prove 100% the existence of God. We're going to begin the journey as Avraham began. And I began the journey with myself, working through proofs and working through the science and the history and all the different types of all the many various proofs. It helps to have a mother who's a biochemist and to work through a lot of the science. But ultimately, I started that in high school, and many of you are in high school, and to ask questions and try to understand, is there a God or not, certainly that is an important thing. To clarify one's beliefs is very important, and then we'll try to begin that journey right now. But just to understand for a moment, the decision to understand whether or not, well, that's in a second, the decision-making to decide whether there's a God or not, is it an urgent decision? Is it an important decision? It certainly is. Is it an urgent decision? Or is it not an urgent decision? Can I just wait on the sidelines and decide until I have 100% proof? Until I have 100% knowledge? So I believe, if we understand, there are consequences. If there is a God, then everything I do every day has a certain meaning, has a certain purpose, there are certain rules, there are certain expectations, if there's a God who gave the Torah. If there is no God that gave the Torah, then obviously the rules are different. Okay? Daily decisions will be completely different. And the impact of those decisions, keeping of Shabbos, will be very different, etc. So understand that if this is this urgent decision, like the can of Coke or Sprite in the middle of the desert, I'm not going to necessarily need 100% proof to act. I am going to try to make an argument and a reasonable amount of proof to try to clarify for myself to see maybe 95% proof, maybe 90%. But ultimately, I'm not going to be bothered by the fact that I'm making a decision based on 90% proof. Because how much proof do we need? Let's figure that out. Let's begin with finding some kind of evidence. If you would go back to the... And I can't really read most of the things, but I apologize. This is a quote from Sherlock Holmes. Once you've eliminated the impossible, whatever remains, no matter how improbable, it must be true. Was there a beginning? So if you go open up a Scientific American 1959, and it's interesting, the stats of two-thirds of all the scientists would have told you that at the time there was no beginning, that there was no beginning to the world always existed. That quickly changed. That belief of two-thirds of the scientists of the world quickly changed with the finding in 1965, the Nobel Prize-winning award for the partners who discovered microwave, the sounds in the atmosphere, the sounds in outer space of a echo of a Big Bang. That was the beginning of a process of understanding that, in fact, there was a beginning to the world. And that's very important as a point of a starting point. If there is no God, right, and there is a beginning to the world, then the question we have to ask ourselves is how did everything start? If there's a God, I know that we have the Torah to say exactly where it comes from. But I'm assuming for now, for the next few minutes, before we hit the buzzer, I'm going to assume there is no God. I'm going to say the following. I want to know if there is no God, and there is a beginning, because the world started with a Big Bang, we know that, then the question is, what was the beginning? What is the starting point? Now, of the more basic fundamental questions, and I apologize for oversimplifying it, there are many professionals in the room who are very knowledgeable in many areas of medicine and science and the like, so I'm just going to try to, in this quick time we have, to take a snapshot. Of the interesting questions one should certainly ask oneself is, okay, so there was a beginning. That means there's a point in time where Big Bang, those of you who are familiar with the expression, I tried searching it online to try to find some demonstrations of the Big Bang theory in terms of just the science of exactly how it worked, in terms of describing the process quickly for you. And ultimately, it's funny because unfortunately there's a show that is very popular and that everything was just coming up. The Big Bang theory was the show. I don't know. But apparently, there's a show like that. But the biggest question that one has to ask oneself, and scientists have to ask themselves as well, is in fact there was a Big Bang, which ultimately the collision created an atmosphere, created the beginning of the formation of the galaxies, is ultimately what was the first piece of matter? What was there ultimately at that beginning point? If there is no creator and there's nothing to start it, so how do you begin? What's your starting point? The Big Bang created atmosphere, created galaxies, and created universes. But ultimately, what is the first, what is the first point? And this poster kind of demonstrates this question. And just to look at the picture, or ask the question yourself. Big Bang theory: in the beginning, there was nothing, which exploded. How is there nothing, right, that explodes? Right, ultimately, there is some matter, and ultimately, you'll go spend time. You can read up on all these theories and try to understand exactly the depth of the Big Bang theory, but ultimately the question that all scientists are also trying to understand is exactly, what's the starting point? How do you have something, right, from nothing that explodes? All right? There was a beginning, which ultimately created the world. What's the starting point? Okay, so let's assume for now there is a Big Bang. There's a Big Bang, and let's somehow get over the fact that the first matter is just hard. Scientists have problems also understanding exactly where it's from. Let's give them that. Let's give that scientist. Let's assume there is some kind of matter, some black matter, some dark matter that somehow explodes. The next question to ask yourself is the following. So from that point, we have a very big universe. We have a very, very, very expansive universe. If you go on the link, I'll try to post it someplace online. You can take a look. Google has a Google Sky. You can actually go deep into the universe and kind of drive around the universe to see how big it is. It is extremely vast, but it is also extremely organized. It's a fascinating thing that an explosion can create such order. Such order, meaning to say, as follows: the placement of the planets, which clearly would have come from this beginning, from this explosion, ultimately have a very, very set path and order. Yes, there is gravitational pull of the sun and the moon, etc. But ultimately, in the entire universe, we don't know of any planet like the planet Earth, certainly. But even the fact that the sun, we are located where we are in the Earth's, in the orbit, thank you very much, in the orbit around the sun, if we were located really a number of miles, maybe 100 miles, maybe 1,000 miles, what exactly is the exact number of any close, certain distance where we'd be closer to the sun, then ultimately, just as other atmospheres of the other planets would be uninhabitable, so too we would not as well. So you have, just picture for a second, you have this explosion, this massive explosion of tremendous power and tremendous matter and tremendous energy and light, ultimately is creating this order. If I ask you a question, and just again, overly simplifying it, but if I ask you a question, I'm going to drop from that top window, I'm going to drop a giant paintball, or I'll shoot a paintball, down to a piece of paper. And I want to shoot a paintball, and I want to write, my first name is Donnie, I want to write the name Donnie. So I'm going to keep shooting paintballs, and I want the each time it hits, I'll try to get some letters out of that. Now again, I'm not going to do anything to try to make any movements, I'm just going to try to drop, maybe I'll shoot it up in the air, maybe I'll collide them. I want to have a blotch of a D, an A, an N, an I on the paper. Would it be possible to drop ink onto a paper randomly and have it write the name Donnie? Maybe. It could be possible. Now again, the forces of nature that we see were not there at the point of Big Bang, at the point of the explosion. So in order for this world to have order, it could be possible mathematically, certainly, but I need it to be I need it to be true. I need it to be something that's reasonable. I have to make a decision. Does it make sense that there could be enough explosions in this Big Bang theory, which creates a certain primordial soup, which ultimately is going to create planets that have order to them? Right? No one in a million years would think that I would drop ink on a page and have this beautifully written document by the end of it. No thinking person would assume that to be true, that I would drop ink on a paper and it would come out like this. If we see and explore the depth of the order of the universe, of the depth of the order of the world, and ask ourselves, how did it get this order? How did it go from chaos to order from an explosion? That is a question that, again, science explains to a degree. We'll get to evolution and the like. But that's really the next step. Evolution is really something which on a planetary level, we'll talk about how to get from stage one of a single cell organism to eventually getting a more developed being. That's another challenge, and certainly part of that, we see certain evolutionary changes to be true and to be reality. But ultimately, even before that, to get to an organized universe from a chaotic universe is something which is a little bit challenging, because there really is a tremendous amount of beauty organization to the world. One that wants to take a look, you can search, not going to do it right now, it's the shortest of time, but to search for a moment, there's a TED Talk on just pollinization, just to see exactly the function of nature and the way the world works, is really a tremendous sophistication and tremendous organization. This is a quote from an interesting person, a person that we're very familiar with, just to read it for a moment. Suppose the eye, with all its inimitable contrivances for adjusting the focus to different distances, for emitting different amounts of light, and for correction of spherical and chromatic aberration, could have been formed by natural selection, seems, I freely confess, absurd in the highest degree. This is a quote from Charles Darwin, as in Darwinism, as in evolution. Darwin himself admitted that there's really a tremendous amount of complexity that's hard for evolution to account for the detail of how organized the world is. Just taking for a moment some facts about the eye, as a point, case in point, the average person blinks 12 times a day, 12,000 times a minute. Human eyes are composed by more than 2 million working parts. The human eye is a 576 megapixel camera. There's a lot to an eye. And ultimately, as we go, if one wants to just take a moment to turn to the page, of page 2. On page 2, as we were looking for a moment about the amazing eye, again, it's once we have this primordial soup, and once we have the creation of some planets that exist and have some, let's say, and let's assume, let's say somehow there was some order based on the explosions that created order, and you have a planet. Now we have to go from a planet of a soup and hopefully eventually create a single cell to the point of getting advanced beings, to the point of getting eyes. Evolution assumes, and this is the next challenge, the evolution assumes that you can go from an amoeba to an actual being. That means that over time, the body and the world is going through small, subtle changes that each time the organism, in order to improve its existence, its chance of survival, or survival of the fittest, it needs to go through certain changes to be able to become more likely to exist. Ultimately, that means that there will be many times where there will be missing links. There will be points of change where something doesn't function as well. What was the point of an eye before it functioned? Right? There are many different parts of the body. If you go through even on single cell levels, to get to more complex levels, very often you have a working gear. What was the point of that second gear before you had a functioning tail on the back of a single cell? What was the purpose of that? That ultimately evolutionary change was able to get over that. That is a challenge. The Gemara says, and the Midrashim bring a story from Rabbi Kiva, who was approached, who created the world? And he said, Hashem. So he said, show me a proof. Rabbi Kiva says, who wove your shirt? He said, a weaver. Rabbi Kiva said to his students, just as a building testifies to the existence of the builder, the garment testifies to the existence of a weaver, so too the world testifies to the existence of a creator. I'm not going through right now all of the proofs. We'll go through a few more in a moment. But just to understand, by looking at the complexity of the organization of the world, as how organized it is, can chaos bring itself naturally to order? That's the question we have to ask ourselves. Does it make sense that we can go from an explosion to ultimately have an organized world? And that was part of Rabbi Kiva's response. Ultimately, the greatest challenge in evolution is not that evolution exists. Darwin's finches, we're all familiar with the change that does happen based on natural change, naturally things evolve. But ultimately, I searched recently online. I've spent many years researching and working on some of these topics. Scientific American had, I think in 2013, 2012, they had an article about missing links. They finally found seven missing links. That was what they, for many, many years, there was missing link is. Ultimately, there's a change between evolutionary change and an animal or being has to go from point A to point B. So you should have many trillions and trillions of changed, of half changes, of things, of a tail before it works. You should find many bones and artifacts that are the in-between stages before things are actually working, before the evolutionary change makes the animal have a working wing. You should find hundreds of non-working wings, thousands and billions and trillions of non-working wings. And they never found any missing links with all the theories. And they found seven, they found seven possible missing links. Now again, if there in fact was this evolutionary change that ultimately the entire world came from, there should be trillions and trillions of half changes, and they found maybe seven. Again, and again online, they're like, show me the picture. Again, whether or not that is ultimately the greatest challenges. A book called Darwin's Black Box, where they talk about this issue of not finding many missing links, and ultimately that being a big question on the theory of evolution in terms of that being accounting for all the change. But there really is a tremendous amount of complexity to the human body, and that is something which is hard to account and imagine that the change can happen just based on simple evolutionary change. Our lungs, just on the very bottom, inhale over 2 million liters of air every day without even thinking. They're large enough to cover a tennis court. The brain and the synapses of the brain, as if you unravel them, it would go around the entire world. There's so much tissue that's there. There's 25 million new cells being produced each second. That's a little less than the population of Canada. Again, there's a lot of complexity to the world. Is it possible that chaos can come to such order? And that is certainly a very important question. But the most important question is to ask oneself, what is the beginning? I'll say there's no God. Fine. Tell me, scientists, talk me through the steps. There is nothing creating something, an explosion, which is creating chaos, which is somehow coming back together, recreating an organized world with such complexity. Again, it's a hard argument to make. And ultimately, science themselves, there are other theories called punctuated equilibrium, other theories to try to account and say, you know what, yes, you're right, there must have been some radiation in the process, and ultimately that sped things up, because ultimately, mathematically, there are questions whether or not even the billions of years old that the world can be, whether even in that time there was enough time to make all the evolutionary change, they themselves admit that there's some problem with the math. But ultimately, this process of trying to clarify for oneself and see whether or not there is a God, that is something which is the obligation of a Jew. Rambam writes, the mitzvah leida, the mitzvah to know that there's a God, which means ultimately, if I'm not sure, that is something which is normal, but it's also something which is a process that we have to start the process on our own to try to clarify. The starting point for many of us, says the Rambam, the way to love and fear God, when everyone contemplates the great wonders of God's works and creations, and one sees that they're a product of wisdom that has no bounds or limits, one immediately love, laud, glorify God with immense passion to know the great name. Again, whether or not there's a being that's creating organization, we need to account for something. Our Torah tells us that, in fact, you know, again, the body is the ultimate driving machine. The goal of the world is, according to our Torah, there's a goal. There's a picture that's created, and there's a purpose to existence, and it's not something which is haphazard. And ultimately, you know, the question of seeing the world, looking deep into the world, and seeing and exploring to understand what brought about this order, whether it's looking scientifically, whether it's looking historically, that there is, and if you look through the Navi, that it's predicted that the Jewish nation is going to come back to the land of Israel, and they're going to resettle Israel, and that has come true. It's never before has there ever been a nation that has done that. And it was told by us in the prophets, in the Nevi'im, many times over, that the Jews will come back to the land of Israel. That is a true prophecy, that is something that comes true. Again, what is the likelihood of something like that happening? We as Jews, we are told that there's a Torah that was given in our Sinai. We are told that as a nation, something that has never been asked of anyone else before, that's never been happened to anyone else before, that the entire world, approximately million Jews stood at Har Sinai, that there was a revelation that we all experienced, that is something that's never been claimed by any nation before in the history of the world. Okay, that God actually communicated with the nation. It's hard to imagine, ultimately, that can be made up, and ultimately that all the nations of the world wouldn't call us out on it. Rather, they would accept our book, the Bible. It's accepted by all nations and all religions of the world to be a holy book, because they never discounted that. It's the best-selling author of all time is God. And why that's so? Ultimately, because it's somehow in the subconscious of the world, it's understood that in fact there is a God, in fact, and there is an organization and there is a creator. This is just a famous quote from Mark Twain. Ultimately, also kind of playing off the question of, if there is no God, then why do the Jews still exist? Mark Twain wrote, if statistics are right, the Jews constitute only 1% of the human race. That ultimately, it suggests a nebulous dim puff of stardust lost in the blaze of the Milky Way. Properly, the Jew ought to hardly be heard of, but he's heard of, has always been heard of. He's the prominent on the planet as any other people, and his commercial importance is extravagantly out of proportion to the smallness of his wealth. His contributions to the world list of great names in literature, science, art, music, finance, and ultimately, out of proportion. This has been the question, that's the famous question, that all the nations have done is, if the Jew exists, and lives on forever, what is the secret of immortality? I believe the answer to this question is that there is ultimately a God. We have a tradition. Judaism doesn't only expect you to follow and assume as a tradition, because I wouldn't lie to my son, and my son wouldn't lie, and my father wouldn't lie to his father, and his father to his father. As a nation, it would never be that the Bible is a book of hope. We receive the Torah from a God. We experience as a nation in Egypt. But ultimately, Jewish tradition, Jewish as well as logical arguments, as well as scientific, one can certainly go through this in your own time, ask the questions. But ultimately, I believe there's much evidence to understand and believe that there is a creator, in fact, and that in fact the Jews were chosen. And ultimately, that there is a God. If there are any questions, feel free to ask me, and certainly feel free to start the journey on your own.
Explain. Go ahead.
This is really starting. Have a good day.
He's making like a shirt, like a smart shirt. I thought you made a very good argument on why there is a God, but I think that Hashem is the real God.
So then the question is, how many people, again, what is a God? What is a God?
To start. Well, someone that created the world.
Right.
And I think that you proved that, according to everyone, that there it obviously is something that created the world.
Yeah, for sure.
So but how would we know that we know the right God who did it and not any other?
So I don't think anyone, most, again, if you search online, most people don't really deny, most nations don't really deny that there's a God. And ultimately, all, in a certain way, it's funny, but Joe, in the teacher's room, someone said Baruch Hashem, and one of the teachers who isn't Jewish said, oh, I started using the expression also because we believe the same thing. And the truth is, she was wrong. We don't really believe the same thing. And they believe that there's, that God has a partner, which is set up the but ultimately anyone who believes